you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Not firing.
Points in the paint up as well. Jokic. Oh, what a pass. No look to Christian Brown.
There we go. We were just have to wait for it. You got to be patient, people. That was an unbelievable pass last night by Nikola Jokic as part of another exemplary performance by the veteran experienced group that Denver has. So indulge me for just a few minutes to talk about the NBA playoffs, which have been spectacular start to finish. You've had number one seeds go down. The number one seed in the East was Cleveland. They're out in five games to Indiana. The Indiana Pacers actually could win the NBA championship this year. That's how wide open these playoffs have been. The games have been memorable, some of them epic. The performances, it seems like every other night we're getting a performance for the ages, a performance that ESPN stats has to measure historically. Last night, the Nuggets at home, in a series that has literally been a test of physical will. The unbelievable defense, the intensity of these two teams in almost every game except for game two has been spectacular to watch. These are not two teams that focus on ISO ball. These aren't two teams that give up, you know, easy bucket after easy bucket. Denver's not a great defensive team, but at times they've played incredibly well when it's mattered. It's a matchup between a championship team from a few years ago with championship players in Denver against a team in Oklahoma City who had one of the great regular seasons in the history of the game. They went 68-14, and their margin of victory was the largest in NBA history in the regular season. But they are a team with young, inexperienced postseason-wise players. They got to the second round last year in their first playoff run together and lost. They have the presumed MVP. It'll be very close between Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, SGA as he's known, and Nikola Jokic in Denver looking for his fourth MVP. I think SGA will get it by, you know, maybe a comfortable margin. We'll see. Interestingly, they have not named the MVP yet, and these two will go at it in a seventh and deciding game on Sunday afternoon in Oklahoma City. But if you haven't had a chance to watch Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, played at Kentucky for a year, Canadian, been in the league, was a top 10 pick, you know, somewhere around number 10, I think, 7-8 years ago at this point. He's 26 years old, so he's probably been in the league 7 years. He started his career in L.A. with the Clippers, got traded. He was not a draft choice of Oklahoma City, but he's been an outstanding player now for several years running. Last year, he was certainly in the conversation for MVP, and this year he averaged 33 points a game. He shot 50%+ from the field, you know, close to 40 from behind the arc. His game is very old school. It's methodical. He thrives in the mid-range. He's one of those old school players that gets to his, you know, spot. And once he gets to his spot, he's almost unstoppable. He's actually got a couple of spots. They're both mid-range spots. The baseline where he uses his body, which is not overwhelmingly physical. It's 6'6", 190 maybe. But he uses it so well to get just enough space. And he's just deadly on that baseline 10 to 12-foot jump shot. Same thing in the paint. Once he gets inside that free throw line, he's able to create enough space, and he's just money, never misses. He's phenomenal at driving the ball and finishing at the rim, and he shoots the three well, too. He is spectacular. he's matched up, not, you know, in terms of guarding each other, against one of the greatest to ever do it. I know that that sounds like hyperbole, but Nikola Jokic is flat out one of the greatest players in the history of the NBA. And you're watching him right now, if you choose to, like I do, in his prime at 30 years old. He is the most skilled center in the history of the game. Now, you may say, no, come on, Kevin, it's got to be Wilt in terms of just overall skill. Well, Wilt didn't shoot the three. They didn't shoot the three back then. I get it. They're, you know, Willis Reed may have been able to shoot the three. He had a really good jump shot. There have been some great centers in the history of the game that could shoot the jump shot. But, you know, Kareem's not taking you out to the three-point line. Russell's not taking you out to the three-point line. I don't think Wilt would have ever taken you out to the three-point line. Olajuwon, maybe a little bit different. He had a really good stroke and a really good face-up game as well as a post-game. Shaq's not going to take you out to the three-point line. Nikola Jokic, in terms of offensive well-roundedness and skill, I think you'd have to say he's the most skilled and versatile center in the history of the NBA. Last night, in a game that they had to have, at home, down 3-2, let the game come to him because he had a player in Jamal Murray who was sick, had a temperature, was listed as questionable, and had not a Jordan flu game. I'm not about to go there, but man, was he good last night given his condition. You could tell he was sucking wind from the beginning. They played him 42 minutes. He ended up with 25 points and a plus-minus of plus 28 in the game. Jokic, 29 points, 14 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals in the game after going for 44, 15, and 6 in Game 5. Denver and Oklahoma City are tied up at 3 games apiece. The truth is Denver had Oklahoma City on the ropes in Game 4 to take a 3-1 lead and had them on the ropes up 9 in the fourth quarter in Game 5. This series could easily be over, but it's not. SGA, phenomenal. Last night was the first truly bad game for one of their other big-time supporting role players, Jalen Williams. He was 3-for-16. Chet Holmgren, if you recall, was the number 2 overall pick a few years ago out of Gonzaga. 7-1, you know, when he got drafted, he may have been 175 pounds. That's exaggerating, but he was less than 200 at 7-1. He's not a whole hell of a lot heavier than what he was when he came into the league, but he is an incredibly versatile big man, can put it on the floor, can shoot it, can post, is a rim protector. They've got so much talent. They've got so much depth. They're young. They're fresh. Denver has the experience. I think they've got the best player and the biggest force in the series in Jokic, but it's close with SGA. But they are very reliant on their starters, although last night they got the first off-the-bench surprise shocking performance from Julian Strother, who came in off the bench and hit 3 huge threes and scored 15 when I'm not sure he had scored more than 2 or 3. I'm looking it up right now in any game. He had 9 in Game 2, which was a blowout. He had 3 in Game 5. You need that. And, you know, you need somebody to come up big because, God, Russell Westbrook, yes, he's still in the league, if you were wondering. 36 years old, playing at this point with, I don't know, his 6th or 7th team. Remember, he was here for a season. You know, the thing that people don't know about Russell Westbrook is he, in every locker room, becomes the alpha leader, the most popular person on the team. And yet, as much as I used to love Russ Westbrook, I came to the conclusion a few years ago, it's really hard to win with him if he's going to be out there for significant minutes. His minutes aren't significant. He comes off the bench. But he's either, if you could just tell Russell Westbrook, you're going to play defense and you're going to crash the offensive glass, but we can't allow you to handle the basketball or shoot the basketball, they'd be great. He'd be great. But that's not Russ. Russ thinks when he's on the floor that he's still capable of going for 40. And he's more likely to airball or literally break the glass on a shot than he is to make one. Although in the first series against the Clippers, he shot it great. He was a turnover machine last night. They had to pull him. And then he makes a big defensive play and a huge driving layup against the pressure late. But this is about Jokic, Murray, and the key supporting players, Gordon, Braun, and Porter, and maybe a guy like Strother off the bench, if Denver's going to use that experience and a short bench to beat an inexperienced but fresher, younger, and deeper team on what will be a crazy home court. Sunday, 3:30, Game 7, second round. This series has been great. I hope we get a really competitive game. I think we'll get a really competitive game, but I'll say what I said earlier in these playoffs. I think Oklahoma City's the best team that I've watched. It's just that this is a sport where typically you have to earn your way, and the more experienced teams end up winning, especially these kinds of games. I think Denver's going to regret blowing Game 5. They had a great opportunity to win that game, and they went cold with a 9-point lead for about a 4-minute stretch that just killed them in that game. But I think Oklahoma City wins Game 7. I'll be rooting for Denver because I want to continue to watch number 15 for the Denver Nuggets, Jokic. The team awaiting them, Minnesota, will not be easy. Another young team. We're seeing a bit of the changing of the guard with Oklahoma City, you know, and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Chet Holmgren, and then Minnesota with Anthony Edwards, you know, in the East and Indiana with Tyrese Halliburton, and New York with Jalen Brunson. Tonight you get Game 6 in Madison Square Garden, perhaps the most expensive ticket for an NBA game that has ever been. I am not a believer that the Knicks better win tonight. I gave Boston a shot down 3-1 without Jason Tatum to win this series. I still thought that they were talented enough to do it. They have a superstar two-way player in Jaylen Brown, the MVP of the NBA Finals last year. I still think Boston can do it, but I don't think that home court, it hasn't mattered. The Knicks took the first two in Boston. Boston took one of the two in New York. If New York loses tonight, I still think they could win Game 7 on Sunday night. But most people think the Knicks better put the Celtics out of their misery tonight, or they're going to lose Game 7. But you could end up with two incredibly tense games between Boston and New York tonight and on Sunday, and you already have a Game 7 with Denver and Oklahoma City set for 3:30 on Sunday. I'm assuming that if it's Boston Knicks in a Game 7, actually that would be Monday night. How about that? You're going Friday night, Monday night. If the Celtics win tonight, Game 7 is on Monday night. Man, the NBA drags this out a bit. But incredible NBA playoff season. It's not always this way. I enjoy it. I've, you know, expressed my views on that. I think you guys as sports fans who aren't NBA fans, I think you're missing out in a big way on just incredible drama, compelling sports theater during these NBA playoffs. This has been a special postseason with just some intense games and all-time epic performances. All right, enough of that. When we come back, Washington's net rest for their schedule in 2025 is not going to be an advantage for them. I'll explain when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So we talked yesterday on the show about the schedule, which came out on Thursday night. Wednesday night and was complete, and we could start to look to see, you know, where and when they played. And one of the things that you have to focus in on is not, you know, getting into, you know, we knew the opponents, you know, the when and where. It's about how it relates to the teams that they're playing and who that team is playing the week before, because that creates something called net rest days. This has been something that's been a big number. Aaron Schatz, among others, have sort of focused on in on it in recent years. The 49ers, as an example, in 2024 had the worst net rest days in the league, and you know that their season went to, you know, hell in a handbucket. You had the largest net rest advantage last year was the Lions. They ended up with 15 wins. You know, we've seen the net rest day thing work more often than it doesn't. And the net rest stat, if you will, is essentially the number of days you have over a 17-week season in terms of advantage days of rest heading into a game or a disadvantage in days rest heading into a game. So I'll take you through Washington's schedule and kind of explain what it is. So in week three, they face the Raiders. The Raiders, on September 14th, the week before, play a game, but Washington played the previous Thursday. So after Washington plays Green Bay in week two on Thursday Night Football, they have 11 days to prepare for their game in week three against Las Vegas. The Raiders only have 7 days to prepare. So Washington actually has a 4-day net rest advantage. And so you go through every week. Not every week is there an advantage or a disadvantage. Week six, and I pointed this out yesterday after looking at the schedule, four of Washington's opponents have bye weeks before Washington plays them. The first one is Chicago. Washington plays Chicago on Monday Night Football, October 13th. Well, the week before, Chicago has a bye week. So Chicago has a plus 7, or Washington has a minus 7-day disadvantage going from no bye week to playing a team on their bye week. Then you go to week 7, which is the next week. They play the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday. Washington's coming off a Monday night game. They have 6 days to prepare. Dallas is coming off a Sunday game. They have 7 days to prepare. So that's a minus 1-day disadvantage. Week 9, they play Seattle on a Sunday night. Seattle's got a bye week the week before. Minus 7 days of rest disadvantage. I think this is easy to follow. If not, you can call us at 301-230-0980. We're taking questions on this. But you see, when one team has a bye week before and they're not playing that week and you're playing, they've got a 7-day advantage. They've got 14 days to prepare for that game. You've only got 7, so it's a negative 7-day net rest number. In week 15, Washington plays the Giants on a Sunday. The Giants are actually coming off the game prior to Washington. They're playing on a Monday night, and then they have a bye week. So it's not 14 days to prepare. It's 13 days to prepare, because their last game going into a bye week is on Monday night. Washington's got a Sunday game. It's negative 6 days compared to what the Giants have. Week 17, Washington has the Dallas Cowboys on Christmas Day. The Washington has a plus 1 because they're playing on Saturday and Dallas is playing on Sunday heading into that Christmas Day game. And then in the final week of the season, As of now, Philadelphia and Washington will have, it says here in the net rest thing, it says Philly has, Washington has a +3 day advantage heading into week 18. That doesn't make any sense. Oh yeah, +3 days. Washington has the +3 days because they played on Christmas Day and Philadelphia played the following Sunday. So Washington is a +3 there. The overall number is -13 net rest days for Washington's schedule. All right, you add up the Chicago bye week, the Seattle bye week, the Giants coming off a bye week, the short week into the first Dallas game, the longer week into the Philadelphia season finale, the longer week heading into the game against the Raiders in week 3, you end up with -13 net rest days. There are only two teams in the league with a worse situation this year. The Saints are at -14. And the Raiders are at -19. Those are the three worst net rest days in the season. Now, so that is, you know, what you have heading into this season. Actually, last season wasn't what I said it was, because I'm looking at, bear with me, 2024, the team with the best net rest day advantage was Baltimore, and then the second best net rest day advantage teams were Minnesota, Philadelphia, and New England. So three out of those four teams had tremendous seasons. And by far and away, the worst net rest disadvantage team last year was San Francisco. They had a terrible season. Just something to keep in mind. You know, as you look through this stuff, it's, you know, it matters. Rest matters actually more than travel. That's been kind of proven out. This year, the Lions have the number one net rest advantage, followed by Miami, followed by the Rams, 49ers, Seahawks, Cardinals, Ravens, Cowboys, Chargers, Giants, and Philly. Washington, New Orleans, and Vegas with the worst in the league. You know, that's not necessarily, by the way, the result of having all of these primetime games. You know, they only have two Monday night games. You know, the primetime games elsewhere are Sunday night games, or in the case of week 2, a Thursday night game. It has to do with the upcoming opponent and whether that opponent had significant rest coming into that game with you on a Sunday night or a Monday night. And Washington is getting the short end of the stick on that. You know, suck it up. Not life's not fair, but... there is a big swing, right, from Detroit, who's got the most days of rest, and Vegas, which has the least amount of days. That's a 32-day net rest advantage. Detroit, the best team in the league, over Vegas, the worst team in the league. And Washington, you know, looking at the key teams in the NFC, Detroit's got a 26-day net rest advantage over Washington. San Francisco's got a 22-day net rest day advantage over Washington. Dallas has 18 net rest day advantage over Washington. Philly's got a 17-day net rest advantage over Washington this season. Let me just see where any other... God, man, most of the teams that have negative net rest disadvantages are all in the AFC this year. Almost all of them. And the NFC teams dominate the net rest edge opportunities, except for Washington and New Orleans, who are at the bottom. So there you go. Just something to keep in mind. Those are, I would consider that to be a legitimate, real takeaway from the schedule. Something that actually proven over time can impact seasons. when you're going into games, too many of them, at a significant rest disadvantage, it matters. You know, when you look at Washington's schedule and you do win-win-loss, win-win-win-loss, win-win-win-win, you got to consider that, you know, in week three, they're going to have a big advantage over Vegas. But in week six, they're going to have a massive disadvantage against Chicago. Now, the good news is heading into that Chicago game, you do have that extra day because it's a Monday night game. But then you go to Dallas, and Dallas has the extra day. Washington on a short week and traveling. You know, then you go to week nine, and you're coming off a Monday night game against the Chiefs, and you got to face Seattle at home, and Seattle's coming off a bye week. That's interesting, right? Like, that is, that right there would be the one. Your Monday night football, you're exhausted, you just played Mahomes and the Chiefs, and then you're coming home. Who knows what Seattle will be like when we get there? Maybe they'll stink. But you're playing Seattle at home, a game that right now you'd probably be favored in to win, but that may be a tricky spot. One really healthy, rested team, and one team coming in on a short week. Same with the Giants game late in the season. You're playing back-to-back road games, Minnesota on the road, and then you go to New York to face the Giants coming off a bye week. So, a few things to consider. I'm still blown away by Philly twice in the final 3 weeks. That's still the biggest surprise to me. I think we all had a clue as to what was coming in terms of primetime and standalone games. Washington, Dallas, Kansas City, the top three teams in the league when it comes to combined primetime and standalone games, they all got eight. Eight. Dallas still, you know, a massive draw. I think we were expecting that part of it. That just comes with the territory. But, man, going to be fun to go through this. Love the start opportunity, though. You know, if I didn't emphasize that enough yesterday, I love the opportunity to kind of start with the Giants. Packers on the road, not easy. Vegas and Atlanta. I got this from Darren in Rockville. I was thinking about this after he sent it to me. He said, Kevin, have we ever seen a faster turnaround in both results and expectations than what the Skins accomplished last year into this year? I can't remember. I mean, 4-13 and a complete train wreck of a franchise. And even though they had number two overall, and even though they picked Jaden Daniels, and there was a lot of optimism about Jaden Daniels, nobody has a rookie year like what Jaden Daniels had. And even if they have an outstanding rookie year, and you turn it around from 4-13 to, you know, playoff contention, it's not 12-5. And the NFC Championship game, you know, it might be 9-8. What did Houston do in Stroud's first year? 10-7 in a bad division. Bad division. They won the division at 10-7. I think that's what their record was. You know, 4-13 and getting your ass kicked week in and week out. I mean, the roster, the franchise. Of course, Snyder was gone, and that gave everybody hope that things could turn around, but nobody expected that. And then to your point, Darren, the idea that you had a team that in 2024, you know, it had Jaden Daniels, so there were a couple of opportunities. You know, they played that week three game on Monday Night Football against the Bengals. You know, you wouldn't have gotten that without the drafting of Jaden Daniels. You know, you got the Thursday night game. Everybody has to get one Thursday night game. So you got the Thursday night game against Philly, but that was it. Everything else was basically, you know, 1 o'clock scheduled until they got flexed into the Sunday night thing with Atlanta late in the season. And then you come back the next year and you've got the most tied with the Chiefs and the Cowboys primetime and standalone games. Yeah, I can't think of the Rams. Maybe, you know, the greatest show on turf, Rams probably were the biggest turnaround, didn't they? They were terrible the year before, and they won the Super Bowl. And not only did they win the Super Bowl, they did it with, you know, pizzazz. You know, the greatest show on turf, scoring more points than anybody in the league, lighting it up. You know, Kurt Warner came out of nowhere. They were 4-12 in 98, and then in 99 they went 13-3 and won the Super Bowl. And then in 2000, I would assume, well, they were. They were the favorite going into 2000 to win the whole thing. But I would assume they played multiple Monday night and Sunday night games. Yeah, they had 3 Monday night games that year and 2 Sunday night games that year. That would be the comp. The only difference would be they won the Super Bowl. And Washington just got to the NFC Championship game. Of course, they won the division at 13-3 and got to host those playoff games. So there was that. Yeah, I don't, in terms of, like, if we had all said to each other this time last year, you know, don't worry about it. A lot of 1 o'clocks, a lot of, you know, next year, look out. We're going to be a contending, perceived as a contending team, and we're going to be one of the biggest draws in the NFL when the schedule comes out. Yeah, even the most bullish on Jaden Daniels or on Adam Peters, Cliff Kingsbury, Dan Quinn, even the most bullish wouldn't have said, yeah, we're going to the NFC Championship game and then coming back the following year and are going to be thought of as one of the most exciting teams to watch. And we're going to be profiled as much as the Chiefs and the Cowboys. We got higher profile, more profile games than the defending champion Eagles or the team right up the road, the Ravens. Sort of nuts. All right. There was something that Gilbert Arenas said that I wanted to play for everybody. About a local player that will be entering the NBA draft. You'll hear what Gilbert said. He's excellent on his podcast. Next.
All right, the Caps lose 3-1 to Carolina, get bounced in the playoffs in 5 games. First time they've been eliminated in round 2 since 2017. The Nats, they fall 5-2 in a midday matchup versus the Atlanta Braves. They will continue their road trip tonight for a rivalry weekend just up the street versus a struggling Baltimore Orioles ball club. The Nats on Deck pregame starts at 6:35 right after Grant and Danny on the Fan. Nuggets, they beat the Thunder 119-107 to force Game 7. They had 3 players with 20 or more points. Jokic put up 29-14-8. Christian Brown, 23-11-5. And Jamal Murray, 25-8-7. The PGA Championship is currently underway from Quail Hollow. Max Homa has surged up the leaderboard. He is now in, let's let the scoreboard load up a little bit. He is -6 on the day. He sits at 4 under. He's tied for 5th. He's up 68 spots on the leaderboard. In 1st is Jonathan Vegas. He sits at 7 under. Matthew Pavone sits at 5 under, along with J.J. Spahn, Ryan Gerard, and Michael Torbjornsson. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Maryland finally hired an athletic director, a methodical, patient process, and it seems like, according to the people that I've talked to, they've landed on a good one. Jim Smith will replace Damon Evans at Maryland as its new athletic director. He comes from the Atlanta Braves most recently, where he served as the senior VP of business strategy, but he's been involved with sports for 2 decades, including at Ohio State, where he was president and CEO of the school's Alumni Association, which, by the way, happens to be one of the largest such organizations on the planet, with 80 employees and an operating budget of $17 million, according to the Washington Post. Yeah, I can imagine that Ohio State's got a very passionate school alumni base and an association to manage that. But Smith comes in with professional experience, with college experience, in the Big Ten. He said, quote, "It is a great honor to be chosen to lead the athletics department at the University of Maryland and to guide Maryland's storied programs into the next era. I am highly motivated to build upon excellence and lead Maryland forward in a dynamic and pivotal time for intercollegiate athletics with a sharp focus on student athlete health, well-being, and academic success." Look, I can speak for many, many Maryland fans, because I am one, and alums. We just hope that there is a recognition that while football is very important, the passion from the fan base is most directed towards men's basketball. Football certainly pays the bills more so than basketball does, because it's a Big Ten school, and the Big Ten gobs of money comes in with that television deal. But we certainly need more attention paid to what this fan base, and it's unique in that basketball has always been number one. I want football to be great too. I'm not saying ignore football. I love when Maryland football's good. Love it. And there have been moments during my lifetime, and Mike Loxley's done a decent job. They went to 3 straight bowl games and won all of them. I'd love to see football be great too, but we had an issue more so with lack of recognition, multiple athletic directors, that the fans, the alums, you see it every year. You know, you see what Xfinity Center looks like for a big opponent versus what the shell looks like for a big opponent. But congrats to the crew that, you know, did the search, and the search committee that helped out, the whole thing. Let's hope Jim Smith is a good one. So Max sent me something this morning. It was Derek Queen, Maryland's freshman superstar, who's entered the draft, out at the NBA draft combine. There are some quotes about his performance at the draft combine. On Threes, Jamie Shaw believes Queen's draft stock is falling because, quote, "The NBA draft combine confirmed the eye test about Derek Queen's athleticism. While it was already known that Queen was a less than average athlete, his testing numbers finished even worse than expected. Queen finished with a reported 12.45 lane agility drill, giving him the third lowest score in the previous 5 years of the NBA draft combine. His 28-inch reported maximum vertical leap would have finished tied with Peyton Sanford, I think he went to Iowa, as the second lowest total last year. The NBA draft combine also showed that Queen has not been able to clean up the hitch in his jump shot from high school." I don't think there's a hitch necessarily. "He shot 20% from three this season and made only 45% of his 111 recorded shots here at the combine. Off dribble, spot up, 3-point star, 3-point side, and free throw. Decision making is an interesting stat with Queen as well, as he finished with 67 assists to 85 turnovers this season with high usage. Dating back to high school over his last two seasons played, Queen has 125 assists to 137 turnovers." So there is a belief that the combine has not treated Derek Queen well. Be careful about viewing agility and athleticism. Derek Queen is a unique player. He's highly skilled. He's high IQ. He is, as he was billed when he came into college, he's not, you know, a tear down the rim athlete. He is, they referred to him as Baby Jokic. That is quite the compliment. I think we saw some of that at times watching him this year. Gilbert Arenas does a podcast with Matt Barnes. Gilbert Arenas actually is a great, analyst, I think, of basketball. John Wall's also become very good at it, too, for what it's worth. But anyway, this was Gilbert Arenas talking recently about Derek Queen on his podcast with Matt Barnes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I like the big kid. He listed as 6'10 and a half, which is crazy. He's like a Jokic. He's
Queen from Maryland, right?
Yeah.
He's a problem.
Yeah.
I like his skill set. Yeah.
What's so funny is it's whoever gets him, you got to steal. And if you're not a smart general manager, he will slip in a draft like Jokic did. When you're in these drafts and you're playing one by yourself, you're not going to see his skill set, right? The skill set that he has is a 5-on-5 game.
Team setting.
So you're sitting there playing by himself, sitting here doing this. You don't see his vision. You can't see none of that. He looks too slow. You can't see how he plays his body, right? Mm-hmm. So if I'm San Antonio with the 2 pick, I might.
I'm not mad at that.
That might be the guy that I actually would, because he is a if you think about Spurs are still old school where they've dominated with 3-4-1, whatever, right? That's him. So the fact that I can play inside out with these two, I think the Spurs probably go after him.
I mean, interesting. I'm definitely.
You already got guard play, right? And then most of the guards, you got Harper, you have VJ, you have Trey.
You can dump it.
I have that already. I have.
I don't think he says much more about Queen. It's such smart insight. I wonder if teams actually really do get duped by, you know, the combine results. Get duped by, he's not very athletic. What do we do with him? I mean, Jokic was, you know, evaluated probably the same way coming over from Serbia. You know, he is that kind of style player. He is a guy that makes everybody around him better with his vision, with his feel for the game, with his hands. He's got phenomenal hands. It'd be a big mistake if somebody just looked at these combine results. I can't imagine teams do that anymore. They're just at the combine rather than watching him in the team's biggest games this year. I mean, this guy is a player, period. And I thought Gil's analysis was so spot on when he said, you're never going to see a player like this and what his ability is without watching him 5-on-5. You know, that's how they play basketball, by the way. They play 5-on-5. They're not playing 1-on-1. They're not playing agility or shooting drills or ball handling drills. His 5-on-5 IQ and feel for the game is off the charts. His, you know, ability to kind of size up where a ball's coming off a rim. And then, by the way, with his hands, great hands. His catches in the post. His passing. He's going to be a really good player at the NBA level. I would love it if he slipped to 6. I don't see San Antonio taking him at number 2, but who knows? Maybe they're smart, like Gilbert Arenas suggested you got to be to take him that high. You know, Cooper Flagg's going number 1, and I do think that Dylan Harper's going 2. You know, I think I like Trey Johnson a lot from Texas. I've just been paying a little bit more attention to sort of the players that are mocked very high and been mocked to the Wizards. This guy's going to be a great NBA shooter in a difficult matchup, I think, on both ends. But I like Queen a lot if he's there at 6. The player I don't like is Ace Bailey from Rutgers. I watch too much of Big Ten basketball, too much of Rutgers, and I saw a guy that just didn't have the compete that you'd want to see. That sometimes is the difference because there are a lot of 6'10 long-armed athletes. Derek Queen just is a basketball player. He's going to make your team much better. Is he going to be a superstar like Jokic? I don't know. I don't know. I don't. The hitch in his shot, there's no hitch necessarily. He didn't shoot it consistently, in part because he didn't shoot it a lot. But he had some big ones this year when he did shoot it. They just had too many shooters on that team this year. Ben Standig will join me next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.